clears the slums. William, much against his will, had been forced by his parents to attend a Children's Guild meeting at the vicarage. The pretty, blue-eyed young lady speaker had made an impassioned appeal for her slum clearance scheme. William was impressed. She talked about too many people living together in one house so they hadn't enough air to breathe, and how everyone ought to give money to get them out and into bigger homes. "I shall be here at the vicarage tomorrow, children," she had announced, "and I want each of you to bring me sixpence here." William walked home thoughtfully. His problem was he didn't have sixpence. Suddenly he saw three little boys hanging over the gate of a small thatched cottage. It was one of those cottages in the village that were let throughout the summer months. Evidently some new tenants had arrived. "Hello," said the biggest boy. He was about 8, an age that William generally treated with contempt, but this boy had freckles and a jolly, impudent grin. William stopped. "Hello," he said. "What's your name?"
"Terry," answered the boy, and turning to the two younger ones, continued, "And these are the twins. They're called Billy and Dicky."
"Hello,"
they said.
"What's your name?"
said Terry.
"William Brown."
"Do you live near here?"
"Yes." There was a long silence. Then William said, "Can you do handsprings?"
"No," said Terry, "but we've often tried, haven't we?"
"Yes," agreed the twins. "We jolly well have."
"Can you?"
said Terry. "Follow me," said William. An hour later, after handsprings, somersaults, and tracking in the woods, Terry and the twins would have followed William to the ends of the earth. William had been glad to forget his problem, but now his thoughts were reluctantly turning to it again as they walked back to the cottage. "Did you know," he said to Terry, "that some people live all squashed up in tiny houses and that we've got to get 'em out?"
"The one we're in's like that," said Terry. "There's only two bedrooms, and one so small it's just like a cupboard. Mother sleeps in that, and me and the twins in the other."
William looked at him sternly. "It's a slum, then," he said, "and you ought to be got out."
"Ought we?"
said Terry. William was silent for a few minutes. He didn't possess sixpence, but at least he could do this. He could himself clear this slum that he'd discovered. Surely, if he could tell the blue-eyed lecturer he'd done that, she'd be much more pleased than if he merely brought her sixpence. "Look here," he said. "You come with me, and I'll find you somewhere else to live. Where you've been living isn't big enough. You've got to be got out."
"All right," said Terry, trustingly. "Where do we go? Oh, look, there's Mother."
They'd come in sight of the tiny thatched cottage again. A woman was standing at the gate.
"Come on, children," she called. "Bedtime."
William realized the impossibility of putting his plan into action at this juncture. "Look here," he whispered. "Let her put you to bed, and then when she's gone downstairs, dress again and come down to me. I'll be waiting for you in the field behind the back garden. Then I'll find somewhere for you to go. You've all got to be got out."
"All right,"
said Terry happily, glad that this wonderful new game with this wonderful new friend was going to continue into the night. In about half an hour, the three boys joined William in the field. Their faces shone clean from their bedtime baths. 10 minutes later, William had successfully ensconced the three children in three of the servants' rooms on the top floor of the hall, the many-bedroomed residence of the Bott family, who William knew were away. He daringly led his faithful band through a side door, quietly past the elderly caretaker's sitting room, up the back stairs, and on up a spiral staircase to the top. "Now you can go to bed," William announced proudly.
"Have we come to stay with you?" demanded Terry.
Yes, assented William. In a sort of way, you have. Now you all go to bed in your separate rooms, and I'll go and find you something to eat."
He slipped down the spiral staircase and was just crossing the main landing when he heard voices in the hall. He stopped. It was Mr. and Mrs. Bott. Aghast, he stepped into a convenient linen cupboard and waited. Mrs. Bott's voice floated up the stairs.
"Yes, I know you didn't expect us, Mrs. Miggs. Mr. Bott's got a nasty cold and we've had a very bad crossing, and he didn't feel like going straight up to Scotland. He wanted to come home for a rest on the way. I think Mr. Bott will go to bed at once."
Unfortunately, the linen cupboard was just opposite their bedroom door, and as Mrs. Bott left this half open, William had no chance of escape. He could hear Mrs. Bott.
Now, what was I saying, Botty? Oh, yes, they told me at the post office that Lady Wharton's staying here at Rose Cottage. You know, Lady Wharton. You see her photo in the Tatler and such like. They've got a house in London and a place in Surrey. And they say the thing she likes to do best of all is to take a small cottage in the country with her children, without even a servant, and do the cooking and all herself. She's come here while her husband's in Scotland shooting. Her house parties down in Surrey are the great social events of the year. Oh, Botty, if only I could go to a place like that, I'd die happy.
Suddenly, from the floor above came the short, sharp cry that a child makes when it half awakes from an uneasy sleep.
Good heavens, she said. Whatever's that?
I didn't hear anything, said her husband. It was your imagination.
Oh, it wasn't my imagination, Botty. There's someone up there. I'm going to see what it was. I'm going up now, and nothing shall stop me.
A few moments later, she returned.
Botty, she said in a faint voice, there's three children asleep in bed up there.
There couldn't possibly be, said Mr. Bott firmly. I told you it was all your imagination.
But they're real, I tell you. Who can they be? I'm going down to ask Mrs. Miggs about them.
A few moments later, she returned.
She says she knows nothing about them, Botty. She'll hardly believe they're there. Look here, Botty. I believe Mrs. Miggs is having her daughter's little boys here for a holiday while we're away.
The telephone bell began to ring violently.
Well, I wonder who that could be, said Mrs. Bott.
William heard her voice down in the hall, growing more and more excited. Then she came upstairs again.
Oh, Botty, it's that Lady Wharton I was telling you about that's staying at Rose Cottage. She's just rung up. She said that her brother and his family are coming over to England next year, and she's just heard in the village that we want to let the hall next summer while we're abroad. So she's rung up to see if she can come and look over it now. Oh, Botty, isn't it thrilling?
She flew downstairs again, and soon William heard the doorbell and her excited voice, punctuated at intervals by the visitor's voice, as they made the tour of the house. William peered anxiously through the crack in the cupboard door as Mrs. Bott and her visitor passed along the landing, and there he got his next shock. For the lady to whom Mrs. Bott was showing her house was the lady whom William had seen calling her children into bed, those children who now slumbered peacefully on the top floor.
"I think it's all perfectly charming," she was saying.
She walked to the foot of the spiral staircase and looked up.
"Where does this lead?"
Suddenly all the smiling vivacity left Mrs. Bott's countenance. In the excitement of showing her titled visitor round her home, she'd forgotten the mysterious children.
That only leads to the servants' rooms. It's not worth going up to them, really, Lady Wharton, it isn't."
But Lady Walton's curiosity was aroused.
"I think I'd like to see them," she said.
The colour stood out in blotches on Mrs. Bott's face.
"Oh, look, Lady Wharton, I never showed you this little dressing room, did I?"
They turned aside. Like a streak, William slipped from the cupboard and vanished up the spiral staircase. He just had time to fling himself into Terry's room and under the bed when they appeared on the landing. They first entered the room where Dicky lay asleep. Mrs. Bott drew a deep breath.
This is my caretaker's daughter's child, she said. Her three little boys are, spending their holidays here.
Lady Wharton looked down at all that could be seen of her son, a bright, tousled head and the curve of one rosy cheek. How ridiculously like Dicky, she thought.
He's very like one of my own little boys, she said. Oh, is he? They're nice rooms, aren't they? They're all just like this.
I'd like to see them, please, said Lady Wharton firmly.
They entered the next room where the other twin lay asleep. He too lay with his face buried in the pillow so that little of his face could be seen, but that little was so amazingly like Billy that Lady Wharton gave a sudden gasp.
Is this another of your caretaker's daughter's children? She said.
Yes,
replied Mrs. Bott.
Twins, I suppose.
Yes. Well, we needn't go into the next room.
I'd like to see it, please, said Lady Wharton again.
Mrs. Bott opened the door and they both entered. Lady Wharton gazed down at Terry. This was extraordinary. Suddenly Terry opened his eyes and murmured,
"Hello, Mummy,"
then turned over and went to sleep again. Lady Wharton's mind worked quickly.
She saw at once what had happened. From the beginning, she'd thought there was something strange in the shuttered, servantless state of the house. It was indeed a curious fate that had led her straight into the den of the gang that had kidnapped her own children. She turned to Mrs. Bart, whose eyes were almost starting out of her head. "Mrs. Bart, or whatever your real name is," she said, "why did you tell me that these children are your caretaker's daughters? You're perfectly aware that they're my children." Terror and amazement deprived Mrs. Bart of the power of speech. "I warn you," went on Lady Walton, "the first thing I do when I get out of this house will be to communicate with Scotland Yard, and I'll never rest, and my husband will never rest, till we've brought you and your whole gang to justice."
No, screamed Mrs. Bart wildly. "No, no, no, I didn't do it. I swear I didn't do it."
Then she sat down and went into hysterics. Lady Walton caught a movement under the bed. She bent down and drew out William. "Another of your victims?" she said sternly to the sobbing Mrs. Bart. "How many more children have you got imprisoned up here, you heartless wretch?" She laid her hand tenderly upon William's head. "Where did she take you from, my poor child?" Terry, roused again by Mrs. Bott's hysterics, sat up in bed and smiled at William.
"He's William," he said to his mother. "He's the boy that brought us here."
"Why did you bring them here?" said Lady Wharton to William.
It wasn't anything to do with her. I'll tell you all about it, if you'll listen."
Mrs. Bart ceased her hysterics to listen.
"You see, I brought them here because I was slum clearing."
You were what?" said Lady Wharton.
"Slum clearing," he repeated distinctly. "I was clearing out the slums, and I just happened to start with them. That was all."
Bit by bit, the story came out. As it came out, the grimness in Lady Walton's eye was replaced by a twinkle. Mrs. Bart's hysterics ebbed and flowed spasmodically.
I didn't know anything about them," she assured Lady Walton. "It's all this wicked boy's fault."
Lady Walton sat down on Terry's bed and laughed. Then Billy woke up in the next room and began to cry. His crying woke Dickie, who began to cry too. Lady Walton and Mrs. Bart went into them. William followed, making voluble excuses.
"Well, how was I to know?" he demanded. "They said they were all squashed up in a little house, and the slum lady said people like that had better be got out."
At last the three children were ready to accompany their mother back to the cottage. Lady Walton gave way at intervals to helpless laughter.
"I've never come across anything so funny. We must meet again to have a good laugh over this. We're giving a small house party at our place in Surrey next month, Mrs. Bott. I wonder if you would care to join it?"
A seraphic smile lit up Mrs. Bott's countenance.
"Oh, I'd love to. I can't tell you how I'd love to."
Mrs. Bott went down to see them off at the front door. Turning away from it, she ran into William, who was trying to slip away unobtrusively.
"Now, William, I hope you're thoroughly ashamed of yourself."
But the seraphic smile still lingered on her face.
A house party at Lady Walton's. Perhaps she'd even see herself in the Tatler. Well, after this she'd be somebody for the rest of her life.
"How was I to know?" repeated William.
Mrs. Bart looked at him. If it hadn't been for William, she'd never have been invited to Lady Walton's house party. She took a shilling from her purse and slipped it into his hand.
"You don't deserve it, William, after the dreadful way you've behaved, but—oh, thanks," gasped William.
Next morning he walked jauntily down to the village, clutching his shilling. He decided not to give it to the slum clearance fund after all. He was a good deal less in sympathy with the aims of that fund than he had been. He remembered having seen a water pistol of a specially superior kind marked 1 shilling in the window of the village shop. He had gazed at it wistfully, as one gazes at the unattainable. But it wasn't unattainable any longer.